Petition number 11748, Reel 4.
Colonel Ismail Khan, Reel 4. So there was a continuous battle of wits between me and our Ganga Ram. Somehow I knew from the moment go that Ganga Ram was scared. And the men sitting in the back of the truck was also scared because not a word would come from them. My experience has been since then that to get any sense out of men who were scared was very difficult, any sense out of them. So I thought I'll carry them with their bluff and go there and find out. As we are from this muddy track, quite a few miles at night, we traveled and we got the tarmac road going to Kodabaru on the left and right to my battalion to Pasipute, 30 miles down nearly. When we got there on the main road, I saw two trucks on both sides of the road which had burnt themselves out. And they were obviously ammunition trucks. So Ganga Ram's story was correct up to that far. Because these trucks had caught fire and hit against each other. Both fell on the sides of the roads. And they contained ammunition. So the ammunition was exploded, being exploded. And they must have given these men the impression that the Japs are behind them. So Ganga again told me, he said, "Now, do you see that? Why don't you turn back?" I said, "No, let's go ahead." As we came ahead, as we went a few hundred yards, I found a patrol on the road. So I stopped the truck. I called him. I said, "Is it from C Company, 2nd Baluch?" They answered in the affirmative. I said, "I'm Ismail Saab." So I said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "We're carrying a patrol in the rear because the two trucks caught fire and they were exploding and things like that. And we thought there were Japanese behind us." I said, "Where's the company?" He said, "The company is ahead at the crossroads." So I told Ganga Ram to go ahead and I joined the patrol on foot. He reluctantly was driving very slowly, naturally. We were behind him walking. When we reached the C Company headquarters, Prem Kumar Saigal was just about to go to sleep. And the British officer from the Dogra Regiment, the company commander, he was sitting there. I forget his name, I remember his face very clearly. And we sat down and they gave me quite a few drinks. I had my supply in my truck left behind. So they gave me some pipe tobacco and I filled up my pipe and sat and talked. So there I learned the story that they were there and these two trucks did catch fire at the back. They collided with each other. Bullets were flying around. Explosives were going on. And they gave a clear indication the Japanese had surrounded them. And they were talking about withdrawal and he had given his orders for withdrawal. But he had kept the time. To himself, he said, "When we withdraw in this order." So this also, Ganga was right. That Chiraga Ram was detailing troops how to turn out from there. So at least Ganga Ram, in his haste to reach the brigade headquarters, saved the face of his company by not having completely ratted and run away from the scene of battle. Because he had good reasons to know that there was an order of withdrawal, so he just took his decision to withdraw before he got the orders. So I decided to sleep there. In the morning I got up, they gave me a truck. The same Ganga driver drove me back. I said, "I want Ganga to drive back." I was patting him on the shoulder and he was feeling hilarious that, my God, finally his story was believed in parts at least. So when I came to this bridge, where the 419 Hyderabad was in position, there was orders waiting for me that as soon as I appear, I should be told to go to see the adjutant. And this captain who gave me the orders, his name was Captain Mehta. Poor devil was killed later on the Slim River. with his battalion, with the dead. He said, look here, the brigade headquarters was making their life misery, and they wanted to know where you were, and they were even thinking of sending a strong patrol to look for you. So then I met Jilani, and he told me also to get back to brigade headquarters as far as I can. When I got there, I was a bit sheepish because I should have returned earlier, but I decided to sleep there. I was very tired. So the brigade commander did not show any anger, but he said he was very happy that to see me alive, and they were a bit concerned about me. But and the brigade major told me that he was missing you, his bloody blue-eyed boy. Then why the hell did he send you? So I said, well, I'll come back. So I gave him the complete story. There was one amusing incident. Then we withdrew south of a place called Machang, at the 26th milestone, I think it was. 26th milestone between Kodabaru and Kuala Kalai Road. We were south of it, and our battalion, the brigade headquarters, and suddenly I got a feeling that something was going on in front. So I took my motorbike and informed the intelligence officer. I said, I'm going forward. He said, well, the brigade commander has gone forward too. As I was coming, going along the road, meridian my motorbike, I found from the right side, some firing came, small on fire. There were the trucks belonging to the 4.7 howitzer battery, which had come about 48 hours before the Japanese attack in Kodabaru, who did a lot of damage to the Japanese during the counterattacking roles and things like that. Their trucks were standing. Some BORs were lounging around the trucks. And when we heard the firing, I stopped my motorbike and they went to ground. Some crawled under their trucks. And there was the first time I heard the banter between the BORs with their really, really peculiar sense of humor. The banter contained short, quick, trite words, sentences, four-letter words, and everything funny, and they were laughing hilariously. I tried to join in their banter, but I couldn't understand their accents, you see. So, two of them came and laid beside me. I said, I thought the firing was coming from the front of this forest. So I said, should we give them a few rounds? They said, yes. So four BORs joined me and shooting into the forest. And lo and behold, suddenly, a tall, handsome figure with a heavy brown, dark brown moustache, very good-looking man, walked up. He was a major. He ignored me, but he ticked off his troops and said, you don't shoot without orders. So I sheepishly got up, kicked my motorbike into action, and disappeared. Because the fault was mine. I was an officer, and I shouldn't have allowed the troops to fire. Leave alone encouraging them to fire. Because in the rear position when you fired, it was criminal, because our forward troops would feel that the Japs are behind them.
Who was this major?
Later I discovered that 2 years ago, a man wrote to me.
This was Peter Hackling.
Peter Hackling. He wrote to me that his father-in-law was in that battery. He was a bombardier. And he was very much interested to know something of the fighting in around Kodabaru. And somebody had told him that I was there. So he had written to me, and I wrote back this story to him. And he wrote back to me and said that that officer that I saw was Major Don, the battery commander. He was wounded, believed to be killed, but he survived, returned to England, and up to 1988, I think he told me he was alive. And his batman was a friend of the gentleman Hackling. And he said he will certainly convey to his batsman that I had seen him at that particular day. That's why it stuck in my memory so clearly. And later I discovered, he recalled his name to me, Major Don. Our brigade commander in his conversation was very complimentary about Don, that he was a good soldier, excellent, and his contribution to the firepower against the Japs were absolutely invaluable. And later on, then we discovered that he had created havoc among the Japanese. So when we reached Machang, this position, brigade commander was there. The CO of the 2nd 12th Frontier Force Regiment was on the left of the road. He was there. And our CO, Colonel John Frith, was there. And the brigade commander, chewing at his pipe, turned around and said, "Well, the Japs are there right in front of us." There was about few hundred yards of paddy field in front of us, open paddy field, with a road in the middle, and on the other side was a complete forest, heavy wooded country. The reports were that some Japanese were in that forest, and patrols had infiltrated through the paddy field the whole night. And every time somebody would stand up a Jap and let go a burst of like a submachine gun fire, like a stand gun kind of thing. In front of us there was a stream about 25 feet wide. On the other side, on the right of it, was a wood pile. From the wood pile some Japanese were shooting too. Just before this, brigade commander said that, "Well, there's no artillery fire available right now. We don't know who's in the forest, who's not in the forest." He said he was going to send two companies of the 2nd Baluch slap in with a bayonet. And he did. A company, the Pathan Company, under Captain Thistleton Dyer. And C Company under Prem Kumar Saigal, the Dogra Company. A Company of the Pathan Company and C Company of the Dogra Hindu Company. They moved right and left of the road and they went up. Just before that, when Brigadier gave this order, yes, that when he said no artillery fire, C Company had bumped into Japanese. And about a section plus the platoon commander were captured by the Japanese. Captain Prem Kumar Saigal was fighting his way around them. A company went and slapped with the bayonet through this paddy field, sporadic fire. They reached in, and then, my God, they went in, with the bayonet out, slapping with the bayonet, as the brigadier said. They went in, C company were moving up, they recovered their men, were captured by the Japanese and chased the Japanese all over the place. Casualties were heavy. Captain Thistleton Dye was wounded and still he kept going, and C Company recovered their men and they came back. This platoon commander, Subedar Karamchand, got an Indian Order of Merit, IAOM, Indian Army Order of Merit, which is equivalent of a DSO for the Indian other ranks. And Captain Thistleton Dyer got an immediate award of a military cross. His patron, Subedar Fateh Khan, got an IAOM. And another Dogra Hindu Naik also got an IDSM. So the battalion got their fair share of decorations in this small, swift action, and the Japanese are pushed back with heavy casualties, so much so that they did not again follow us up for quite a day and night. So at that time we realized that Brigadier Billy Key had fought the Japanese to a virtual standstill. And we got back to Kuala Karai, which was a railhead, and at the railhead we had to destroy all our vehicles because there were no road, and we got into trains and we started withdrawing towards south. So by the then we reached out to Kuala Lipis. On the way, we destroyed bridges. 2nd Baluch, my battalion, we destroyed bridges. The engineers were destroying bridges. We were merely giving them cover, protection. There was a time when we were at the railway line in a little hut, and we ran out of whiskey. Some people said some Sikh shopkeepers came and they stole it. But we had no whiskey, so I had to trudge back to 2 miles to the brigade headquarters, and somebody handed me a bottle of Australian whiskey, which I brought back to my battalion. We were very thirsty for the drink that night. We reached Kuala Lipis, which was on the road to Kuantan, where 22nd Indian Brigade was in position. The 2nd 12th Frontier Force Regiment had left us earlier on, and they had gone and joined the 22nd Brigade. 22nd Brigade was in Kuantan with the 2nd Royal 18th Galwal Regiment and 1st 11th Sikhs under Colonel Parkins, and 2nd 12th was under command of Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Cummings. We, 2nd Baluch, came down to Kuala Lipis to a place called Jeran Tut, and we manned a ferry to help send supplies to 22nd Brigade. Just before this, as we were still fighting in Kelantan, we heard the news one evening of the sinking of Prince of Wales and HMS Repulse. Everybody was very crestfallen and they thought it was a big blow. But to my young mind, I was second lieutenant with about a year or so service. It seemed incredible that the 2 ships gone and we lost the bloody war. I couldn't believe it till later. And this ferry which you are manning was being run by the survivors of the Prince of Wales and Repulse, under a petty officer and a commander. We were still there. We were recuperating. Our casualties were quite, not so heavy as the rest of the brigade, but we were reorganizing the battalion when we heard that Japs had attacked Kuantan and the 22nd Brigade was to withdraw. In the meantime, I had gone to Kuala Lumpur from there to bring transport for the battalion which we had left behind. I was supposed to collect about 8 trucks, 15 runaway trucks and a couple of 3-ton lorries to collect them and the drivers. And I went to, and I stayed there. I spent the New Year's night of the 31st December 1941 in Kuala Lumpur. And I returned next day with the requisite number of trucks. But as I got back, we heard horrendous stories about the fighting from Kuantan. I was at the ferry when a brand new carrier came. And that they said that Colonel Cummings is wounded lying there. Somehow I was fated to see all my favorite senior British officers from other battalions lying wounded in a Brangham carrier. But there was the story I was told. The adjutant, I think he's alive somewhere even now, Ian Grimwood, thin, tall officer, magnificent soldier. I'd seen him previously in Kota Bharu carrying out counterattacks. Not as adjutant, but running on the attacking with the forward company. Their CO were lying wounded there. Both of them were surprised, according to the story I got from them, by the Japanese party. Colonel Cumming fought hand-to-hand with against the Japanese, killing quite a few, and he got wounded himself, while his adjutant, Captain Ian Grimwood, a Jap soldier came and tried to bayonet him in the stomach, but his webbing brass buckle and his webbing belt caught the bayonet, and he pushed the Japanese back, shot him in the stomach. For this action, I don't know whether Ian Grimwood got anything or not, but immediate award of VC was announced, a Victoria Cross for Colonel Arthur Cumming. He was a mildest of mild men, quiet and offensive. His father was a preacher in Quetta, Baluchistan in India. He was born, educated, sent to England for education, went back to Quetta. And he got commissioned to 2nd 12th Fighting Force Regiment. Great soldier. Just as I was telling the story about the fighting in Machang, that our two companies went slapping with a bayonet. At that time, when I mentioned that Colonel Cumming were there too, CEO of the 2nd 12th, just as these companies had gone forward and fighting there, from this pile of wood that I mentioned earlier on, Japs are firing. I heard Colonel Cumming, Arthur Cumming, ask a soldier to give me a grenade. He rolled over the tarmac to the right, crawled to the stream. 25 feet away, he lobbed the grenade into that pile of wood. And it exploded, and we found 3 dead Japanese in that pile. That's Colonel Cumming. I forgot to mention this story earlier on, but came to me as I'm describing now. To the 2nd Brigade withdrew, then we withdrew from Lippis. I think we withdrew by trains. I was given the command of an armored train with a machine gun platoon for my battalion from C Company, and to destroy the bridges en route, while the brigade and my battalion and 22nd Brigade had gone ahead. So then we were told to take our position south of Gabas in the central Malaya, because fighting was taking place to the west coast, River Slim and the Moar, River Moar fighting. At that time, 43 Indian Brigade and 45 Indian Brigades had supposed to have arrived there, and they were also destroyed practically. We took our positions on the 4th milestone, a place called Batu Anam, which means in Malayan language, in Malay, 4th milestone. Batu means stone, 4 is 4, Anam is 4. In front of us, in Gamas, the Australian Brigade for the first time came into action. The date we arrived in Batu Anam, as I said, the 4th milestone, about 1100 hours in the morning, on 10th of January, 1942. Having spent our Christmas in Kuala Lipis, in Jerantut, and having done our Christmas there and seen the 22nd Brigade through, we have arrived there now on 10th of January. We reconnoitered our positions and we finally came to a nice bit of ground, and in front of us was the Australians for the first time taking the brunt of the fighting in Gamas. The battalions were, to my mind, something like their coming numbers. However, I can give it to you in writing later on. Yeah, the 2nd Battalion, 26th Australian. 2nd Battalion, 29th Regiment, Australian Infantry Force. They were holding the bridge across the river in Gamas, which is the central Malaya practically. And we were in Batu Anam, 2nd Baluch, and 1st 13, the Cookies were a little forward on the road, on the right of the road. We were holding these the very nice positions, but we had a lot of gunners, Royal Artillery in our positions too, and artillery duel is on. And we had heard, I was told by my CEO to go up and check up on the Australian positions, see how they're disposed and to bring him back on my intelligence man. As I reached Australian position, immediately I came across a language barrier. Though my English was pretty fluent, pretty good, with the British officers and things like that, when I came to regional accents, I used to get quite lost. And the Australian accent, completely foxed me. I couldn't get through their terminology even. Language was colorful and loud and beautiful. And whenever I appeared, I was offered a drink. Even if I was a sentry on duty, he took me to the section commander, the platoon commander would give me a nip. Then when I met the company commander, he'll give me another nip. Then when I reached the battalion commander, I was a total loss. At my young age, I wasn't that experienced in heavy drinking, but I felt myself in a total loss at that time. So I picked up their positions, and they told me what they told me. So I finally bade favor to them and came back. When I got back to my CO, I said, nothing to report. He said, what do you mean, nothing to report? I said, I couldn't understand their language. So he sent the D Company commander, Captain Harvey Kelly, to go with me. So because I knew the road. He rode pillion with me, and I took him back to the Australian headquarters. In those days, there were no ban on drink driving. Otherwise, I would have been banned straight away. But I got to the Australian headquarters, and again, the same thing started. A drink here and a nip here and a nip there. Finally, Harvey Kelly turned out to me, said, wish we had brought an Australian English dictionary with us. But we got some semblance of the information, and we came back very hilarious about it. As we got back, we heard next day that Australians put him on this fight. The Japanese came with their tanks. They overrode their forward positions, and they came gaily along on the bridge. And the Australians waited for them. As they crossed the bridge, the Australians went for them. From everywhere Australians reached up, they destroyed quite a few tanks and knocked quite a lot of Japanese out. And we heard this gleeful news, and we also gave a cheer. But after a couple of days, next day, I went to see, I heard the gunfire was coming right from in front of us, the Japanese artillery. The flashes of guns were coming. So the gunner battery commander in our position told me, since I knew the road, could I go forward as far as I could and take the compass bearing of all those flashes for the counter battery fire. I took my motorbike. I went along the road. First, I was looking for the 1st 13th 24th Rifles position on my right, which I missed. I kept going. I saw some potholes in the road, so I blamed it on the Japanese artillery fire. Then I realized I'd gone a bit too far. So I turned my motorbike over these potholes, avoiding them, and came back, and suddenly I found the